Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Chill show tonight. A Saturday like this, not much happening. Surya says so many questions, so little time. Yeah, I've been looking through the news, but really, it's not super interesting what's happening. I'm gonna have to start making shows about perhaps the super chat request. I do have to go back and read about this Arab guy that someone paid a big super chat for me to review. I didn't get the time to do it yet. And I'll be taking a break tomorrow and we'll be doing the Patreon hangout then Monday. So that is what will happen in the next 2 days. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Elon is in a phase of counter-signaling anti-Semitism. Lindaya was saying, X opposes anti-Semitism in all its forms. Anti-Semitism is evil, and X will always work to fight it on our platform. And X is always open to proactively working together in that fight with all groups. Absolutely, says Elon Musk. Of course, we know that Elon has his little caveat in his head when he says these things, in the sense that he keeps it in his mind that, oh yeah, to me, anti-Semitism is racial violence and appeals to violence. And therefore, the anti-Semitism that Elon is willing to combat is not as broad as what the ADL would want him to do. But that's where the devil lies. That's why I said, now define anti-Semitism. Elon Musk, the devil is in the detail. And Skov the Nomad was asking, how would you define it, JF? I would define it as an intentionally blurred construct equating political opposition to certain ideas as included in an umbrella of irrationally held false racist preconceptions which can be denied on their face without further thought. The construct commonly serves in avoiding honest debate. Skov the Nomad was saying, okay, that's obviously what it has morphed into. But what about the actual thing? Doesn't exist or never has? I said, there was never a morph. It's what it's always been. If you look at very old writings, like more than 100 years old, you realize that anti-Semitism is a conception that stemmed within the Jewish communities, within Jewish intellectuals like Freud. And they were talking of anti-Semitism not in the way we talk about it today. There were some resemblance. You know, Freud was very much pathologizing anti-Semitism, presenting it as a kind of disorder of the mind. So that is a resemblance with the modern conception. But that's because the modern conception has precisely integrated these elements from Freud. But when you read these old books, you realize that anti-Semitism was properly labeled then, because they were not talking about it as racial hatred. They were talking about it very much as anti-Semitism were the opponents of Jewish ideas. They were just the people who are anti-Jew in the sense that they adopt a contrary political position. They are the enemies of the Jews. They are the people who criticize the Jews. They are the people who have political beliefs opposed to the Jewish project. And that is the proper way. When anti-Semitism was used in that sense, it was properly defined and properly used. The problem is, since Freud, it has merged into a kind of diagnosis of a defect of the mind for the purpose of not engaging with the idea. I don't have a problem that there would be a term out there to point to people who politically oppose to Jews, to Jewish ideas. So I wouldn't mind if there was something like the term anti-Semitism to point to the people who have a set of interests that are contrary and very much at odds with the interest of Israel, with the interest of the Jewish technocracy, or with the interest of the academia. That would be fine, but there is a problem with this term anti-Semitism, where it's being kind of put in an equivocation. It can mean two things. T.S. Apostolos says anti-Semitism wasn't even a word until 150 years ago. Jews were so small of a group and in ghettos of cities only essentially wandering group. Well, I don't know about the 150 years. That's precisely what I had in mind when I said texts that are older than 100 years, like texts that are pretty much in the Freud era or slightly before, a couple decades before. I don't know that they were such a small group that it didn't matter. Jews are tied with the history of Rome, with the history of Christianity, with the tension with the rise of Christianity. I think that Jews matter to understand history of the last 2,000 years, definitely. So I would disagree with your assessment here. T.S. Apostolos says, to be more specific, you have to go into Christian church history, which most cultural Christians don't. Well, exactly. Silver Spider says, all anti-insert group here are bad. Unless you're anti-white, then you are just fighting oppression. Yes, that is one way in the modern world where we can identify a contrast in attitude with respect to racism. End of the line, Joel says, JF, the 9/11 attacks occurred 22 years ago. Has the West learned any lessons from this? Interesting question whether the West has learned any lesson. I think that the initial response of America to 9/11 is the wrong one. That is to have to cultivate some sort of anti-Muslim positioning, which very much served Israeli interests. See, so there is a triangle of pressures existing in Israel's position in the Middle East, America brought into this war by planes driven by Muslims, piloted by Muslim terrorists, and the reaction of America after 9/11, which was to invade all sorts of countries at the behest, at the interest of Israel. So that is a problem. The fact that there was a set of Jewish intellectuals in America who have, Sam Harris being one of them, who have participated in the kind of scapegoating of Muslims and the whole directing of the attention of the American empire to, A, the Muslims are a threat, the Muslims are a danger. And that is something that was really not good. Not a good idea to do this. So have we learned? Well, in a way we have learned, but it took decades. It took 2 decades before we're kind of in a different context now. We are no more involved in ground wars in the Middle East, but we are falling again for the same traps with the Ukraine-Russia war, in the sense that we are giving way too much support to this war, financial and weapons and mercenaries. So all in all, did we learn from 9/11? No. Because the one thing that we should have learned is never believe foreign interests who are trying to foment you foment some anger in you against a group for the purpose of manipulating you toward a war. If we had learned from 9/11, at least if we had learned 2 decades later, we wouldn't have done the same thing with Ukraine. We would have been wiser. We would have said, hey, when's the last time that we got involved at based on interests that aren't ours, really, but we were basically told it was our interest by some other nation to somehow fight another people. And, you know, there is overlap between what we're doing in Ukraine and what we were doing in the Middle East, because in the Middle East, although we were attacking Muslim nations, Arab nations, there was the power of Russia that was there. And it was a consideration for the militaristic people, thinking, oh yeah, if we don't go into Afghanistan, the Russians are going to control Afghanistan. And so it was already a proxy war toward Russia. And if we had learned anything from 9/11, it would have been, do not serve as the iron end for a proxy war against Russia. Do not make yourself the servant of Israeli interest on a request. And we've done it again with Ukraine. And Joe Biden seems headed toward toward maybe going onto the ground in Ukraine for his second presidency. So no, we've learned nothing. T.S. Apostolos says, if Hillary was elected, we would have been in war with Russia sooner. That is true. That's why I was hesitating at responding to the question in the negative, because we got out of the Middle East. Not totally. I mean, we're still striking Syria on request. We're still a force of potential attack onto the Middle East. And I'm sure we're still meddling in all of those countries in various ways that we don't necessarily hear about in the media. But we did at least withdraw our main occupation of nations. That is good. Anon says, do you think the Armenia... do you think the Armenia-Azerbaijan war will drive Russia and Iran apart? I don't know enough about the detail to give an informed take on this. I don't know. It seems that these nations will always be the enemy of America. And it seems that if Iran wanted to detach from Russia, it would need to kind of ally with the U.S., which Philip Fabry, in his book, he has speculated about this. Iran potentially just, you know, all of a sudden, not being the axis of evil, but having a friendly regime that somehow gets power there and playing the American card, America's friend card. It's possible. I mean, nothing is impossible. But I don't know. I don't know enough about the country to know how likely it is. Trump explains why he didn't fire Fauci. Oh my God, go ahead and give me your excuses, Trump. You know, Trump always can do anything. Trump is the guy who would tell you, yeah, we don't care about the rules. Let's do it. I'm a superpower. I'm the president. Just my tongue, just speaking, can declassify documents. I can actually declassify documents just by moving. Just if I do this, the document is declassified. So let's hear his excuse for why you didn't fire Fauci. First of all, you're not allowed. The former president said when asked why he didn't fire him, which Mr. Hewitt said was the biggest knock on his presidency. First of all, he's a civil service and you're not allowed to fire him. But forget that, because I don't necessarily go by everything. But Dr. Fauci would tell me things and I wouldn't do them in many cases. But also, he wasn't a big player in my administration. Trump is so amazing because he has an open cognition. He is so honest, you know, he's an honest guy. And that he is so transparent about what's going on in his mind. And here in this sentence, he's trying to both surf on the Trump brand of, oh yeah, we did everything Fauci told us, and we did an amazing job. It was lightning speed vaccine development. There was nothing like this in history. He's trying to play both this card and the anti-vax crowd because he's been canceled and he's realized a couple of days ago, I've noted his change of strategy. A couple of days ago, he started speaking against Fauci and against the vaccine. So I think he's starting to be aware that there is a major risk to his presidential campaign, which is that there are people in the Republican Party who may hesitate at being enthusiastic at voting Trump because of his support for the vaccine. So now he's trying to surf on both. Hey, yeah, vaccine development, lightning fast, did everything Fauci says. But also, I don't necessarily go by everything. And I wouldn't do many of the things he asked. Dr. Fauci became a big player in the administration of Biden. He's a very big player in Biden's administration. So that is Trump trying to dump the responsibility for Fauci to Biden. Because he's planning, okay, maybe in the campaign I will have to frame myself as the anti-Fauci. That is so amazing. This guy lays out his cognitive dissonance just publicly like this. It comes in the form of his sentences. T.S. Apostolos sends a super chat. He says, how are you preparing for the coming recession, global financial crisis, BTC, cash, Alex Jones, freeze-dry meals? Well, honestly, I've been preparing for years and there's nothing to be done, nothing to change. The idea of being able to take a recession first is not to be dependent on the normie economy, which I've liberated myself from since 2017, 2016. Have reserves, have a land, have property. Have the ability to produce food. That's an extra luxury that I have. I mean, I didn't take care of my garden this year because I had too much on my plate. But at any time, if it becomes a matter of survival, I can reactivate the garden. And yeah, so BTC is good to have, not for the recession. But you want to have BTC in the bull run that precedes the recession. So you don't want to keep your Bitcoin during the recession. You want to switch to cash, switch to crypto, that if it's just for storage to go through the recession without using it, then you can switch it to stable coins. But in the recession, Bitcoin will be hit also very hard. So it's not a superb time to huddle when the recession comes. But I think we'll see a bull run before we see a full hit on Bitcoin in terms of a big drop of price. That is my impression. The recession could come in 2-3 years. The bull run for Bitcoin is due in 1 or 2 years. So yeah, these things, and just if you don't have much expenses and you can survive on very little, and I have food reserves, you know, I don't even have to care about it. I don't even have to worry about anything special for the coming recession. Cloud Warmer says, Jeff, why does the system seek to take particular interest in the persecution of anyone who does not want to participate? One of our rights, according to the UN, is the right to autonomy. Why are we not really allowed to be autonomous? Why are we forced to participate in systems and common structures? Yeah, well, the realization of this is the realization that basically our whole system of liberty is bullshit. The leftists don't really believe in it. You are stuck in a problem of a society that has grown to parasitize productive people, to drain from them, to get money from them through taxes, to make their own personal success just drained by the rest of society. And so the realization that you've come to in that super chat is the realization that you must have that our society is bullshitting you. You don't have liberties. You don't have opt-outs. It's just displays of liberty. But the reality is, if you had something like self-determination, there couldn't possibly be laws forcing taxes. Taxes would have to be voluntary. There couldn't possibly be laws forcing you to have your child at a school with diversity. You could choose even on racial basis, you could choose, I want to go to a school where there's only this race. If you had a true liberty of association, they couldn't possibly do forced diversity. But we don't have it. There's no such thing as liberty of association, no such thing as self-determination, no such thing as parental rights. The whole system is displayed to you to bullshit you, and you just have to test a little bit of it. I tested some of it in my life to see the system come back at you and a violent reaction from the system. Cloud Warmer says, Jeff, what are your thoughts? I'm going to build on a question I raised the other day with you regarding New Age stuff. Have you noticed a switch from the left wing, which was corralled into self-improvement tropes starting in the 60s, now to the right wing being made busy with similar talking points? Yeah, I think it's interesting. Self-improvement. The thing is, the left is so bigoted. This is fascinating. The left is so bigoted that there are lots of times where the left's attack on the right requires them to even give up some of their true beliefs, you know? For example, well, it all starts with the biggest current fight of the left, which is racism. The original statement of racism, if you think of it back a couple of decades ago, was, well, we are against discrimination. But the modern left is attacking so strong in their anti-racist quest that they have to become somewhat racist toward white people. So they have to give up the former perception of racism because it's untenable, because everyone knows that if you make just the system fair and without discrimination, we all know who's going to win. We all know who's going to win a fair game, okay? And so the left is distraught and it's like, okay, well, we need to change the definition of racism. Now racism is this white power type of thing. And only white people can be racist. And now it works, see? So they have to abandon their former beliefs to completely attack onto a new front. The same thing happened with Stéphane Moliner and the whole idea of defooing. So Stéphane Moliner had said something on his show. It was just a belief that he expressed, which wasn't particularly wrong in my view. I would side with him on this. His conception was, if you are surrounded by a family who's hostile to you and they are violent to you, of course, in his particular case, he was thinking of state violence. He was thinking of the rest of your family siding with the state violence against you. Doesn't matter, really. If you are in any situation where your family is violent against you for something that you consider is a wrong done to you, you should leave them. You should get away from them. That's not particularly scandalous, but somehow they made a whole cancellation of Stefan Molyneux around this back in the days. And it's like you had leftist authors in the newspaper saying, he has been pushing for a radical belief, defooing. But the problem is, you know, being in revolt against your family is a total punk leftist thing to do. I mean, just see the whole LGBT revolt and the kids making TikTok videos about how, oh my God, my father and my mother are refusing for me to get a surgery and that kind of stuff. So the whole revolt against the parent line is a very leftist thing to do. But somehow in that circumstance, they wanted to crash Stefan Molyneux, and they were able to play the hypocrite there and to not be that for a moment. Suddenly to be scandalized at defooing, which is the leftist dream. The leftist dream is absolute horizontal influence on behavior, so that all of your beliefs, none of them, not a single one of them, comes from your parent. That is the view of the leftists. They like, that's why they like public schools. That's why they like propaganda and experts and all of these things that you can learn away from your parents. DK Shadow says, now, if your family doesn't affirm your identity, you should defoo your parents. Exactly. That was fascinating to me. So I think that what you described there with the new age stuff, the self-help, I think that a lot of, you know, the modern self-help representative is basically Jordan Peterson. And I think that the left has decided, okay, we want to frame this as right-wing. And yes, it means detaching from, just like they have detached from the original racism definition, just like they have detached from their punk values of the 90s, they are now detaching of the self-help because, oh my God, self-help, there are so many bigots in there and there are so many weird thinkers like Jordan Peterson who won't go along with the leftist discourse on LGBT. So, yeah, I think it's just a natural strategy of the left. I don't think they do it particularly consciously, but they do it. And let's not forget that this operates over such long periods of time that the left of today isn't even the same people as the left of yesterday. It's a mix of new people coming in and people dying. So, yes, self-help. And it's amazing how self-help is a ultimate, very individualist thing. You know, this whole idea that I'm an author, I'm writing a self-help book, and you're going to take yourself into your own hands. You know, it's very isolated. It's an isolated philosophy that is the most individualist expression of a psychology approach, if you will. This whole idea that, oh yeah, only you can help yourself, so you self-help. And it's interesting that self-help has switched toward a slightly right-wing perception to the term, while also the left was throwing themselves in the arms of the experts with COVID stuff, with experts on this, experts in climate change. As the left was becoming more and more authoritarian, they were realizing that it's not tenable to be this punk individualism of the 90s, since we're going to be adhering to institutional, since we're going to have power over institutions, we're going to have institutional control. The self-help will be the isolated bigots that we want to combat. That has happened. And Cloud Warmer says, there seems to be a 100-degree flip. A lot of the tenets of the traditional left-wing from a few decades ago seem to have now found their place in the right-wing, such as LT heating, Yes. Anti-vax, yes. Anti-war, yes. Anti-establishment, yes. Yes, and it's very complex, but it's part of understanding the history of our society. It seems that the people who are interested in institutional control, they perhaps were perceiving the left as inconquerable back in the days of George Bush, and they would think, okay, George Bush with the Republican is our only path to basically involving America in a war. But I think that since then, the left has understood, wow, we have big power. We have big intimidation power, and we can use it to control America further. So I think there's been a gain of confidence in the establishment by the left. Silver Spider says, hey, Jeff, speaking of defooing, my mother is an alcoholic and I won't allow her near my family as long as she is. What is alcohol doing to her brain that makes her choose to drink more instead of apologizing, repairing relationships, changing behavior, etc.? Seems like she will die before she admits fault. Yeah, I mean, we don't know much about alcohol addiction. You know, it's because alcohol is not addictive through the exact same mechanism that nicotine is, for example. So nicotine, it's very clear. It's nicotine activates cholinergic receptors, and it turns out that in your basal ganglia, you have, which is a part of the brain at the center, it turns out that you have the wiring there to repeat actions. So the basal ganglia is what handles your motivation to do series of actions to obtain something that you find to be a reward. So nicotine goes straight in that network and short circuits it, giving you the rewarding part and the whole, let's train the brain to get more of that. So that is how nicotine is addictive. Now, alcohol and all of the other addictions, they're not as direct. But I believe that they must affect this basal ganglia network because it's really the network that handles your addiction to things. It's really a network with which we can, in a mouse, we can lead the mouse to repeat any action that she's capable of doing as long as we stimulate in those areas in a rewarding fashion. The mouse will just do whatever, you know, we can. If the mouse is capable of doing it, and if the mouse can realize that there's a link between this stimulation and the action, she will keep doing it. She can do flips, she can roll on a wheel, she can activate a button, no matter what you want. So addiction is always boils down to a recruitment of the basic networks for behavioral repetition, i.e. learning. I'm absolutely certain that alcohol must trigger these networks in some indirect way, even if it's not as direct as nicotine. And that's it. We are animals. We have a brain that has evolved to give those rewarding experiences. And, oh yeah, that is good. Keep doing it. That is bad. Stop doing it. And all of the drugs that cause addiction, they somehow hit on the good part, even if it's not truly good for you. So that's what's happening in our brain. If someone becomes a negative influence in your life, so at some point you can move on, you can leave them behind, and it's too bad that it's your mother, but there's no reason to... There's no reason to stay behind, to get dragged behind by a weight in your life. You know, it doesn't take much people like your mother in your surroundings to totally ruin your life. They are dependent. They demand attention. They demand care. They demand energy. All of it is wasteful. And so you have two or three people like this in your life and you're done. You're going to be performing much less professionally in terms of building your own family, in terms of your own vision. They're going to keep you down. So yeah, you can leave them behind. Shring Mamel sends a super chat. He says, JF, one of the girls I've been texting found out that I got a trespass by university police after approaching hundreds of women in 2 days. She admires how ballsy I was and thinks it's hilarious. Well, then she is mentally open. That is a very good sign, because a lot of the women, they can't help but listen to a social signal, you know? It's like, oh my God, you got in trouble. Oh, well, I don't want any trouble. Oh, that's weird. That's creepy. Oh, you did these things. But if she can find this funny, you know, it can become a... First, it's a marker that she is slightly less socially trusting than the average woman. So it's a very good marker, because it means that if she decides that she wants a relationship with you, you know, there's not going to be all these social signals coming to her and trying to change her mind. So I would definitely keep contact with her and, you know, just make it a joke. It's hilarious. It's hilarious that the university police came to you because you had said to too many women that they were cute and that you wanted their phone numbers. And yeah, I mean, this woman might respect the fact that, hey, here's a systematic guy who has set on a goal and he's taking the means to realize it. That's exactly who I want to partner with, you know? Yeah, so keep going with this woman. It might be a good sign. Go away, sends $10. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, please watch and review the racial dynamics between Jews, Italians, and Anglos in the Coen brothers' film Miller's Crossing, one of the most interesting depictions of Jews in modern cinema. A non-Jew would be canceled if he made that film. Wow. You know, there was a moment with Mama JF where we were watching all of the Coen brothers' movie, but somehow we must have missed this one, because I didn't watch it at all. Tom Regan, an advisor to a Prohibition-era crime boss, tried to keep the peace between warring mobs, but gets caught in divided loyalty. Okay, so a crime gang movie. Oh, man. In 1990, it must not be the best of the Coen brothers, but okay, I might watch it. Ah, 1990, usually I don't watch. Trig Mamel says, JF, she was a straight A girl in high school. She's going to college for free in her STEM field. Okay, well, you know, a hole is a hole. Rodi Lacid says, JF, my nose is dry and completely clear, but my throat is very itchy and I'm coughing a lot. One, can I use a nasal COVID test swabbing my throat? And two, am I going to die? You can take a throat extract with a Q-tip type of, you know, a long Q-tip type of thing that you would get in a COVID test. Now, keep in mind, if you're talking about the COVID tests that are kind of like a giant tampon, that is a little big, but you could use the tip of this to touch your throat. It's feasible. Don't pierce your throat. Don't go hard. Don't go deep. You don't need to go deep. But there, if you are infected. There's viruses all across your throat, all in your mouth. So it's possible. Depends on the shape and depends if it's too big. But if it's a small Q-tip, there should be no problem. And will I die? No. And I don't know if you're trolling, but I think I've been pretty clear. If you die from a respiratory infection, you were due to die. Accept death. It's a normal part of life. Don't try to fight it. Just try to live honorably. That's all you can do. Zelensky on Starlink gate. Musk committing evil and driven by big ego. Amid the continuing controversy over Elon Musk having previously made the decision to block Kiev from utilizing Starlink satellites to attack Crimea, Zelensky's office has lashed out in what we might call a bite the hand that feeds you moment. Yeah, I mean, again, this had happened months ago where Elon Musk wasn't giving them everything they wanted and they were trashing him publicly. I mean, at some point, Elon Musk will just be tired and he's going to say never again. Never again do I find myself in a war effort. What else do we have? Joe Biden. People were mocking this segment.
And I particularly want to thank Prime Minister Modi and the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman. Mohammed bin Salman, and President von der Leyen and the European Commission. And since he's not speaking today, I wanted to, or maybe he is speaking today. I had a note he wasn't speaking. At any rate, I'm going to stop there.
He doesn't seem to know much. JF, your thoughts on this? Cloud Warmer, a man crossing the Atlantic Ocean in hamster wheel arrested after a three-day standoff. Okay, that is weird. A picture of the human-sized hamster wheel from an earlier failed voyage in 2021. The sea is a cruel and unforgiving environment, from orca whales attacking vessels to the occasional rogue wave. A man in Florida is now facing federal charges after he tried to head out into the Atlantic Ocean in a massive hamster wheel and ended up in a three-day standoff with the United States Coast Guard. That is fascinating. This guy just wanted freedom and he made a stand. He stood there for 3 days in his hamster wheel. That is a long time. According to The Independent, the U.S. Coast Guard cutter Valiant spotted the bizarre hamster wheel 70 miles off the coast of Georgia on August 26. Inside the strange-looking wheel was Reza Baluchi, a 51-year-old Iranian-born athlete. The Coast Guard stated in court document that Baluchi threatened to kill himself with a 12-inch knife if anyone tried to arrest him. He also claimed there was a bomb inside the wheel. The explosive device was later found to be fake. My God, this guy was prepared. It's like he didn't just want to cross the Atlantic with a hamster wheel device. He was prepared in case he needed to get rid of the police forces or hold them off with a fake bomb. Wow. Listen, I'm all for respect the liberty of people to float onto the ocean. This guy doesn't constitute any sort of danger. If there's enough air in his balloons, he should float. So let him float. And he's an athlete on top of it. He must have good cardio, I suppose, although at 51 year old, NN says, let him go on his ridiculous journey. Exactly. Let him go. If he dies, he dies. But it's not like he's going to do anything amazing at 51 years old. So it's like dying, trying to accomplish something as crazy as this is kind of beautiful. It's a beautiful death. Rand Paul is blasting the Pentagon for their role in Niger, demands to know how many boots on the ground. Yeah, we should start asking questions because there is a war, and it does seem like one of those wars in which America will have a back of the scene role, or maybe front of the scene role, and that's never good. Governor Lurian Gresham says her duty to uphold her oath to the Constitution is not absolute.
Yes, all the examples you cited.
So she's enacting an order, an executive order that says, oh yeah, you do have gun rights in New Mexico, but right now it's an emergency. Because I've decided that it was an emergency. And so, since it's an emergency, you don't have gun rights anymore. That is basically the history of every single modern politician. It's always like, oh yeah, well, it's an emergency. Well, they have the emergency button a little loose to my taste.
Crimes, kids shooting at other kids, shooting from cars. So what's the value of the civil order? Why not just do better law enforcement?
Both. The value of the order is that it gives me three things. One, it says it's a statewide issue and it's a message to everyone to start leveraging their resources and arresting people. Two, the jurisdictions come at this.
She wants to arrest people for having guns because it's an emergency. There are people dying from guns,
including with the DOJ restrictions, differently without the leveraging and the additional resources, arresting, and where do they go? We got to make sure that everyone is bumping up their services. It's a message to the Metropolitan Detention Center. It's a message to the HMOs. You better figure out treatment. We have been sort of stalled out.
Treatment? You want to treat someone for their belief they should be holding a gun?
To your point. This order basically says, stop stalling out, and to your point, just arrest everyone. Well, I also have to have the ability, I can't arrest everyone. There are literally too many people to arrest.
This is so confused. So there are too many criminals to arrest. We can't do it. We don't have the resources. So we're going to do this order, which keeps people from bearing arms publicly during some emergency temporary moment. How is that going to help? You're going to send criminals to be holding their guns now in a hidden fashion. Now you'll have the same numbers of guns on the streets. Only the honest people who want to respect the law will have to leave their guns at home. And people are just going to be hiding their guns in under their belt.
Allow us,
if someone's got a concealed carry permit in Albuquerque walking down a public street, they're not going to get arrested.
I can make the point that they should be. And this is the point. I'm willing to do anything and everything within a...
Maybe they should be arrested. He was giving the example of someone carrying a gun with an open carry permit. Maybe they should be arrested. Maybe. That's how you manage your police force. Maybe. Should we arrest new guy for stating something on the regular chat? Maybe. Yeah, maybe arrest him. I don't know. Someone could make the point that maybe they could be arrested.
A shred of evidence-based effort. Because if you're not horrified that on any street corner in too many cities in New Mexico, there is someone with a gun sticking out of their waist or their belt.
That's called America. Doesn't matter your amount of horror that you can feel at it. It's the Second Amendment. They can have a gun. It's written in the Constitution. You are subjected to the Constitution. I can't believe this woman in New Mexico needs a Canadian to explain to her what America is about.
And I'll tell you, if you're a young person, you're not allowed to have a handgun.
Well, it's a crime already.
I got it. But
So now she goes on a side question of ownership of guns by minors. So you really don't have an argument. It's you slide into a special case. We were talking to you about the case of an adult just holding a gun legally in your town.
We won't be able to arrest all of them. So imagine, just in a perfect world, if this was upheld, it gives all of these police officers the ability to focus on the real criminals.
Last follow-up.
Yeah.
You took it.
But your point is valid.
You took it.
Not clear about how that works in terms of the mechanic. I think it's an order that is meant to deprive of rights. If they apply it to the criminals, then that could work, but they will also probably apply it to people who have not committed crimes.
To the Constitution, isn't it unconstitutional to say you cannot exercise your carry license?
With one exception, and that is if there's an emergency, and I've declared an emergency for...
So if I decide these rights don't exist anymore.
Temporary amount of time... I can invoke additional powers. No constitutional right, in my view, including my oath, is intended to be absolute.
That is absolutely fascinating. This is what we've reached in turn. This country is going straight to hell if people think like this. With women in politics, we now have everything is relative. Everything is... Nothing is absolute. Even my oath to the Constitution isn't absolute. So it's like, I have an oath to the Constitution, but if I decide that it's invalid, for what? For purposes of emergency that are declarable and unverifiable statements of facts about the world. You know, they say there's an emergency for COVID, there's an emergency under Obama for whatever crap that he found that was an emergency. Apparently, there are hundreds of emergencies that we're actually carrying because they were never declared ended. Apparently, we're still in emergencies like from the 90s. So politicians are using this concept of an emergency to give themselves absolute rights. I don't know how this will turn.
There are restrictions on free speech. There are restrictions on my freedoms. In this emergency, this 11-year-old and all these parents who have lost all these children.
Oh, so the emergency is that woman has emotions. That's the emergency she's facing. Because you're talking about someone who's already dead? That is not an emergency. Sorry. That doesn't even qualify. If someone was about to die, perhaps you could call it an emergency. But the only emergency here that you are mentioning is, can you think about the families? Think about the tears. Think about these people who have faced some event in the past. Well, you're already disqualifying you for an emergency. If it's people in the past crying about events that have already happened, it's not an emergency.
They deserve my attention. To have the debate about whether or not in an emergency we can create a safer environment. Because
there's no debate. You have just imposed this. So it's over. The debate is over. You have used your super emergency powers. This country is going straight to hell. ICC lead prosecutor, we will start prosecuting cyber war crimes. Karim Khan says that his office will now be investigating and potentially prosecuting war crimes committed in cyberspace. This comes after Joe Biden ordered his administration to begin sharing evidence of alleged Russian war crimes committed in Ukraine with the ICC. Well, yeah, it sounds like this will just become another arm of the normies and the American empire to just find Russia has done something evil on the internet. But I don't feel like it will actually pursue justice on the internet. U.S. government begins probe into Huawei breakthrough chip powered by a 7-nanometer processor, which is just a few years behind Apple's iPhone and who's getting the jitters over the new development. The people at Capitol Hill, the lawmakers, okay. We are working to obtain more information on the character and composition of the purported 7-nanometer chip. Yeah, I mean, you know, smaller chips will just do more computations. That's what I would expect. Mike Lindell cannot keep his cool during an interrogation where the liar's strategy is to insult Mike's pillow. Mike Lindell's my pillow. And it works. He ends up insulting his pillow, and look at him.
Okay, and I'm not asking about the lumpy pillow calls.
No, they're not lumpy pillows. That's not what they call on. Okay? When you say lumpy pillows, now you're an asshole. You got that? You're an asshole, Mike, is what you are. Mike, no, sorry. He's an asshole. No, he's an ambulance chasing asshole. That's what you are. Lumpy pillows, kiss my ass. Put that in your book. No, they answer anything, any problem customer.
Well, is it, put that in your book, is it a book interview or is it a liar thing? Because it does look like a filming from a court or something. I don't know what's the context of this.
That wants to reach Mike Lindell. Those are the ones. I want to talk to Mike Lindell. I want to talk to Mike Lindell. They send them to here and they go... Or they call about maybe they didn't get their pillow on time because of the FedEx or whatever. But we'll cover them even though it could be somebody else's fault. Nobody called because of a lumpy pillow. But good one, though.
You done?
Yeah, I'm done.
What I'm saying...
Obviously, you don't have a my pillow, too. You don't, do you?
What I'm saying...
Oh, yeah, people are pointing that he's an ex-cocaine addict. Maybe he's still on coke. Maybe he still has some of that edge from the coke moments of his life. I mean, this is Mike Lindell. I think he's always a little bit like this, always exuberant in his ways. DK Shadow says he believes in his product. Yeah, he got canceled very hard because I remember Mike Lindell. I remember that when I was in America in hotel rooms traveling there or when I was living there, Mike Lindell was just a part of the mediatic landscape. He was everywhere. There was always his ads and there he was selling his pillows. But eventually, when he got into the more radical right-wing stuff, like the more radical, I mean, just believing that the election was stolen, to me is not very radical, but somehow it got perceived as radical. He got isolated a lot and canceled a lot. As a last news item before we go, Biden officials likely violated First Amendment on social media, Fifth Circuit Court. Well, no shit. We've been saying this for a long time, but it's all about the Fauci emails and the whole remote communications where the health experts of the government were passively aggressively like, oh yeah, maybe this guy is not accurate. Maybe you can do something about it. Maybe you should look whether it's violating your Twitter rules. And even in their actual conspiracies, the leftists are really bad at it. It's like not even an isolation. Like if there was some secret channel from the government to Twitter, you would want to have at least two or three hoops. You know, you would pass the information. You'd make sure that someone really privately passes it to some other agent, and then you want to pop it back into Twitter. But these idiots were at like 1 degree of separation. It was like government email and poof, Twitter email. Unbelievable. They were just violating First Amendment rights just like that, in acting in the dark, behind the veil. That is it for tonight, boys. I'll take a break tomorrow. I've been working hard, and I'll take a whole day of relaxation tomorrow, and I'll be back on Monday with the Patreon hangout. There will be the regular show for 40-50 minutes, and then we'll go Patreon hangout right away on Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Much love, and I'll go rest. I'll go rest for the whole day tomorrow. Bye-bye. Thank you.